From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, I'm sitting down with Josie Barnhart, who is the Republican vice chair of the New Hanover County Board of Education and also a mother of children in the district. Back in May, those two very different roles intersected when Barnhart, as a parent, challenged the book Blended by Sharon Draper, which she felt was inappropriate. Specifically, she thought the theme of racial profiling leading to the book's young female protagonist being accidentally shot by a police officer was too mature for young readers. Eventually, Barnhart took her case to a district committee, asking to remove the book from the school system as a whole. And in the end, Superintendent Dr. Christopher Barnes came up with something of a compromise solution, removing the book from third grade libraries and requiring parental permission for fourth and fifth grade students. At the time, Barnhart voiced concern that WHQR had identified her in our reporting, saying that she had challenged the book in her capacity as a mother, not a school board member. We felt that her role in elected office presented a clear complication, even a potential conflict of interest, and that made her challenge more newsworthy than if she'd just been a private citizen, especially because her challenge was not just for her child's classroom, but for the whole school district. I think it's fair to say that Barnhart and I did not see eye to eye on the reporting at the time, but we've spoken a few times since, and we agree that there were some tough questions raised by the book challenge that felt unresolved, and we both felt it would be beneficial to have a conversation about it. Life happens, and our schedules did not line up for a few months, but we felt it was still an important discussion to have. So this week, on Tuesday afternoon, she came to the WHQR studios to talk it through. All right. Well, Josie Barnhart, thank you very much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So this conversation has sort of been on hold for a while we were both doing lots of other stuff. But we wanted to come back and sit down and talk about some of the events and ideas around the book challenge thing that happened way earlier in the summer. I think this has been like 1,000 news cycles ago.
Right. 1,000 news cycles ago. I think it's really important, though, that we're able to have a sit down and discuss this. I know as a board, we had a very press-heavy book challenge a couple years ago, and that really started a conversation between board members about what are the laws, what are we required to do, what is the standard, what is the process. And so we kind of, after experiencing that, we kind of revamped some of the things so that we were ensuring we were doing things by law. And I had printed them out. There's a few different reasons that you are allowed legally to remove a book. And so if it's educationally unsuitable, if it's pervasively vulgar or inappropriate to the age and maturity of grade level of the students. And so anytime, whether it's a parent who brings it up or somebody else, anytime criteria does not meet that or does meet that threshold, it should not be allowed in our schools. That's what it comes down to.
So in your particular case, you are, and I want to give you some credit for this, kind of in a difficult position, right? Because you are, on the one hand, the vice chair of the New Hanover County Board of Education. Mm-hmm. You're also a mother.
Yeah.
So you have a district-wide concern about what goes on, and that includes curriculum material and what's in libraries and stuff like that, for which you are, you know, responsive to constituents writ large, the whole district. And you're also a mom who might be concerned about something your student might read.
Right.
And so the reporting we had way, way earlier in the summer, or maybe that was the late spring.
Yeah, it's right towards the end of the school year. Yeah.
Was about your challenge in your personal capacity.
Right.
And so I wanted to talk through just like open-handedly, you know, what were your concerns about that book as a mom?
So I think you laid out beautifully the two hats that I have to wear. And on the one hand is understanding the process legally. We want our things to be fair. As a board member, as somebody who's serving for the district, having a fair process is important for our staff. It's important for our families to understand that we're going to treat things with fidelity. Not saying that we're going to come to the conclusion that whatever party wants, but to know that whenever a concern has arisen, that it's going to be treated with respect and intentionality. So, mom hat, right? There was content that came home, and it was a little girl who was multiracial, trying to find her identity.
This is the book Blended.
Yes, the book. And so she's trying to find her identity and going back and forth in the middle of a divorce. One side of the family was white, one side was black. And so she just felt like her identity was not complete. And so partway through the book, there is a scene where her and her stepbrother get pulled over and pulled out of the car at gunpoint by cops, and she ultimately gets shot. The author or the narrator, she's 11 in the book, and the author had said that this was for ages 8 to 13-year-olds. And so just the component of that, when I was discussing, because I read alongside my kids a lot of things, we discuss about a lot of topics, but just the unsettlingness of what came from the conversations with my children about this. And ultimately, it took me about 6 weeks before I said, I think I'm going to bring this up. I brought it up immediately to staff members that had provided my kids with this content, and they were appalled that they said they had no idea that this was in the book. When I was looking up the reviews, I couldn't even find it in a Google review until, like, after 20 different searches, this little blurb about this concern of this, you know, racial tension. And so I said, if somebody who is plugged in with this and knowing the grounds of things that should not be in our schools, it's not censorship, what it's saying is accountability of, we are not going to put these things in the hands of kids, specifically young kids. Because when you're talking about creating an opportunity of a conversation, it's very different than just free open reading about something. And so it was about 6 weeks, and I said, you know what, as a parent, I brought this up one-on-one with a staff member, and they were appalled by what had been gifted to my child. And why would I be nervous to bring it up to the school? Because ultimately, it's up to the district to make the decision on any content. It's not up to the parent. But it takes people willing to say, hey, let's have a conversation about this for our kids. And so I sat on it for back and forth for about 6 weeks and ultimately decided to do it because it was just unsettling. I said, this is not something that this was something I was alarmed to be my kid to be reading at such a young age. And I'm sure that other parents would also have the same alarmness. Again, it would have been different if it was a conversation like, hey, this is what we're reading, this is what we're going through. But ultimately, that's why I submitted a complaint.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you felt like because this was presented without scaffolding, it could kind of catch fire.
Yeah. I mean, and I do believe that it meets the grounds that it is not up to the maturity level for an 8-year-old, personally.
So, and I've heard a lot about that. And I've heard, you know, obviously we've heard from plenty of folks who felt like this was an important book. It should be read. But I want to set aside those voices for a minute. And for people I've heard from who felt like this book was inappropriate, for some it was just the intensity of what's going on. The divorce narrative is something that, you know, for better or worse, lots of children in
that that's super necessary, and kids are experiencing an identity crisis. I related to reading that back of the book. No. I related to that, but it was definitely compounded.
But the scene with law enforcement, that is a very intense scene, and I have heard people who felt like 8 was just a little too young. I've heard people who felt like the inclusion in the book was unnecessarily racially divisive, and I've heard from people who felt like it was, you know, maybe something that if it was just dropped in towards the end of the book, and it wasn't like the book was about racial profiling or the strained relationship between minority communities and law enforcement. So the book itself doesn't do a ton of unpacking about that. Where did you land in sort of that sort of spectrum of concerns?
I mean, I feel like kind of a little bit of a lot of what you just said. And a lot of different areas. And again, it came down to, do I not bring up a concern because it wasn't the overarching theme of the book? Do I not bring up a concern because I was able to talk through it with my own kids? Do I not bring up a concern because, you know, and I just didn't feel settled about it. So again, like I said, after 6 weeks, that's whenever I said it needs to be brought up to decision makers for them to look through it. Because if you have a staff member who, and I'm grateful for the truthness of it, of saying, I didn't read that. You know, if you have a staff member who thinks an innocent thought of saying, hey, this book is fine without knowing some of the underlying underlying issues that are presented in there. In addition to a divorce, I think it's good to just say, maybe we reevaluate this.
So let me play devil's advocate for a minute. For people who said, look, there are many, many, many black families who are having that conversation with young children. 8 seems very young to me, but maybe 8, 9, 10. And saying that, you know, it's called the talk, you know, and it's looked a lot of different ways. The talk that Bill Cosby gave, you know, in the 80s is probably different a little bit than the talk that black parents have to give now. But, you know, I've heard from black parents and colleagues that this is a conversation that happens, you know, almost like a rite of passage. And about your relationship to the rest of society, but especially law enforcement, and how dangerous it can be to mismanage that relationship or misinterpret what's going on in those situations. So for people who felt like that was, you know, a scene that would resonate with kids and maybe would not be shocking and in fact would be validating that they would see it, can you see that point of view, or does that not make sense to you?
No, I can see that point of view. And this is the question, the challenge that I have with that thought process is, do we in a school system, in the teacher realm, do we say that everything that could happen is fair game to discuss? And this was not a classroom discussion, like I said. But that comes into a lot when you start talking about it, right? And I'm trying to choose my words carefully. We have somebody behind bars that was in our school system for a long time doing things that should not have been done to children. Would that be okay to put in the hands of kids and just to give them this idea to say, hey, teachers do this stuff to kids? Because I think that would be horrible. But, hey, it happens. I mean, along that same vein, if we're saying, hey, things that happen should be discussed with children, they should be exposed to it because it happens, I think that's a real dangerous slope to be setting for our kids as far as accountability.
I see your point. And as a parent, I can, you know, when I was growing up, there was quite a bit of debate about showing the film Schindler's List in classes. I believe I was in middle school. I have to go back and check the dates, so don't quote me on this. Mm-hmm. But there was certainly, you know, some people who felt like this should be for AP high school English only. I mean, there are some graphic scenes in that film,
yeah.
Unsparing scenes. And there are some people who felt like, you know what, this is so important that maybe middle school is appropriate. I think we all agree that kindergarten would be way too much, but there was not a consensus,
right,
about what age group, what class, you know, 5th grade or 7th grade or 12th grade would be the right time for something that heavy. And I think this falls into a similar category. I also wonder, you know, how does the district handle it when, I mean, let's just be honest, there are probably some 10-year-olds who can intellectually and sort of emotionally handle something that heavy and some who can't.
Mm-hmm.
That seems fair to say. So what is the district's job? Again, so putting on your vice chair hat now.
Yeah.
You know, in saying, do we deprive some students of a book that could further their philosophical journey, that they would resonate with, that would be good for them to read, that they could understand and engage with, in order to protect some other students? Or do we, you know, or do we err on the side of you know, access to information? Like, where do you draw the line? How do you draw the line?
I mean, this is going to be a continual thing that we have conversations about. And for me, it comes into, number one, when we were looking over policies, we did not have what those expectations should be. I mean, I think it's fair to say, I think that we could agree on this, that professionalism looks differently for different people. Right? If you are a 55-year-old individual versus a 22-year-old, your definition of what professionalism is, of just coming to work. And I know I've had conversations like with my husband and friends of like, if you look at the people who have been in the business for 30 years, it looks very different from the people coming in. And I don't know if you can have some agreements. I see your head nodding,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Of just what that expectation is. And so we first said, what does the law say about this? Like, where is those defining points? And so I think that's what we're discussing here, is these tipping points. There is an acknowledgement that not everything is appropriate for school. There's
I think,
legal
yeah,
grounds
I,
for
I,
that.
I agree with you. I think in some of the conversations, like, we know the easy ones, right?
Right.
We know super fudge is fine, right? But I remember when I was a kid, there's a Judy Blume book called Wifey, which is not a children's book. If children are listening to this, do not read that book. It ended up in, I think, our high school library. It has some extremely graphic sexual content.
Okay.
It is not a child's book. It is just written by an author who has also written children's books. Mm. And of course we got our – this is before the internet. Of course we young boys got our hands on this book. If you told me then or now that that book was inappropriate for the high school and being removed, we would all acknowledge, yeah, that doesn't go in there. It's all the gray zone cases, right, mm-hmm. where it's not just about how a parent might feel, the district might feel, but how a student might engage with it. And I think that was some of the, I don't know, maybe the uncharted, yet to be charted territory. As you move from a decision about, hey, I'm a parent, my parent hat on, what's right for my kid? Should I say, you know what, this book is too intense. I don't want my kid reading it. So I'm going to tell the librarian and the teacher, hey, if my kid asks about this book, no. And now there's actually some
protocols
more codified protocols put in place.
I think that's going to be very helpful as we navigate this process, because there is an opportunity now where previously there was not an opportunity for parents to be intentionally vocal about the different things that they're concerned about.
As you move from a concern about that to a concern about whether or not it should be available in the district, do you see a point where that gets more troublesome to you about that balance?
So I think where the issue that it gets convoluted is we talked about trauma, maybe not you and I particularly, but when kids experience traumatic situations, it's not positive for them. There needs to be opportunity for them to grow from that so that they don't stay stuck in this traumatic instance. And trauma can come with different formats. And so if we are introducing these heavy ideas for kids who have experienced it, or we are now making that experience happen for a child of a traumatic incident, something that should not happen to a child, without an outlet, I think it's concerning as a district decision maker of saying, if we are creating these instances that students are experiencing this, potentially creating these traumatic experiences for kids, but then not having a lesson about it, a conversation about it, it's just like, navigating territory. I think that could be very troublesome to some of our kids to not have an avenue for them to be able to express and digest what they're reading versus just saying, go read about it. Does that make sense? I think that's where the gray area is, and the acknowledgement that as a district, if we're going to put these things in there, it's not just a book about divorce, because like you said, it's very common. Like, that is something that I think most people would say, there's nothing wrong with a book of, I agree, there's nothing wrong with a book about divorce. There's a lot of kids who are going through that, to navigate through that, and very relatable, where the concern is this other convoluted stuff. So, and this is where the acknowledgement of those things and being honest with our parents about, hey, some of these things, this is what's in there, heavy topics, right? And let's back up for a second of this particular book. But if you're talking about, let's talk about navigating deaths of family members, or if you miscarriage, right? Like you could go through different things in life that all happen. They're real things, but they could be heavy, right? They could be heavy if a kid has experienced that, their parent has experienced that, of like losing a brother or sister and childbirth or something. These are things that are real things that happen, are traumatic experiences that could be applied to students that we as a district need to be cognizant of, so that when kids are checking out books or being engaged in content, that parents are able to help facilitate those conversations at home, because ultimately that they're the ones who need to be made aware of this.
I understand what you're saying. I think where some people pushed back was the idea of removing it from the entire district. And there were some people who felt like, and this is not the only book where that's been the issue.
Right.
But the idea that based on concerns about heavy, the serious social cultural issue here, and it maybe being inappropriate for younger students, to then, at what point is it too far to remove it from? Is it too far to remove it from that classroom, that particular school, the entire district? I mean, do you see, is there, from your point of view as a mom, is there a point where it's too far for one parent to say, you know, based on my concern, it should be taken out of the whole district? Or is that your right as a parent?
So it's not with the parent's right. The parent is not the one being the decision maker here. The parent is the one bringing up to the district to say, hey, does it meet this criteria of saying that this is pervasively vulgar or this is education unsuitable or not to the age of maturity? So my question became, and I brought this up because we had a discussion at the board to say, let's look at the process. And my question says, is if any grounds were met that justified the principal or teacher saying, yeah, this needs to be removed, that should automatically trigger a district reconsideration. Because if this is the law that we're held to, and if we have some schools saying, hey, it's not meeting this threshold for the law, then why are we allowing it somewhere else in the district? I mean, this is as far as accountability measure and the, you know, my board vice chair or board member hat, that's what I look at. And like, if we're saying in some schools, let's say hypothetically in schools that have a higher PTA or PTO, very quickly, you know, something might change. Should we then have to wait 8 months and somebody else to find it to say, hey, you know, 8 months ago over here, they said this was not appropriate. Why did we allow this across the way?
I can see that. And I think, you know, if it was American Psycho, Bret Easton Ellis's almost unreadably vulgar, mm-hmm. quote unquote, masterpiece, which I taught to advanced undergrads, and some of them were still queasy at some of the content. If I found out that was in the district, I would be like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know? And I think if you found out that it was in your school and you had it removed and then it popped up in another school, to your point, 8 months or a year later, I could see that being a concern. But I think as much as vulgarity is subjective, that book is so far over the line mm-hmm. that I think you could say this is not appropriate for kids. You want to teach it at a, you know, postgraduate level, okay, but this is rough stuff. When the question is, you know, academic appropriateness or like the level of intellectual rigor
maturity, yep.
you need to bring to this book for it to be, you know, meaningful for you. That seems like again, from my point of view, that seems like a much broader gray area.
I mean, it definitely is. I don't think that there is a straight line definitive right answer. But I'm saying that is the threshold that we have to judge things by, like what the laws are. That's my job. Sitting on the board is looking at these are the laws of what we allow, what we don't allow. This is what the protocol is, like of the expectation. Now, is everybody going to agree with what meets that threshold? I think that's what you're getting at. I don't think the answer is yes. I think that there is going to be some gray area of removal. And some things are going to be way easier to say, yes, this clearly meets the threshold. Or no, this doesn't because whatever reason, justification. But I think having a process to be able to allow the opportunity of conversation is needed because as an author, their job is to sell books, right? And the more books that they sell, the better that they do.
I mean, that's a fairly cynical take on the role of author, but okay.
Okay, but I mean, but
some authors have higher aspirations than just selling books.
Okay.
And I have friends who are authors. They are not making a ton of money off of this.
But if you have spanned, if you're an author and you want your book to be read by as many people as possible, and you span an age range that's in elementary and middle school, you're hitting two different libraries. So you're making twice as much money, right? Just from the financial aspect, and I understand what you're saying. But so being in school libraries is very profitable for authors to do. Why? Because districts have multiple schools, multiple buildings. So if you can sell to a school, then you have a greater chance of having a higher cash flow come in versus just you buying a book off the shelf.
I can see the argument. There's an economic incentive
right.
to have the book portrayed as being appropriate for as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you, this is my last question for you as Josie Barnhart with your mom hat on. And that is the way things played out with blended, you know, where you had Superintendent Christopher Barnes come up with, you know, what some people I felt like was an honest attempt to broker a compromise here. You're never going to make anyone happy. And sometimes if you make people on both sides unhappy, that's the sign that it's a good compromise. How did you feel about what the end result was?
I'm trying to keep this a civil conversation. When you had reached out to me as a board member, about a book that I had challenged as a parent. I just had it just sinking pit in my heart, because the concern that I'd like to pretend that doesn't exist is targeting of my kids. And I never brought the name of a staff member in any of my concerns, because that was not the point. The point was literally to look at and say, this content should not have been, it's still my opinion, it should not have been in the schools. It was not appropriate. But instead, there was an attempt to not give me as a parent the fair process simply because of a political party that I'm affiliated with. And that was, in this whole thing, that was the worst feeling, and truthfully. That article got released before the decision was made. I was never given, as a parent, never given a full breakdown. It just said, hey, we're going to meet at this day, and in about a month from now, we'll get back to you. So I was just waiting. And so I got the result back from the superintendent and had the opportunity to challenge if I chose, that he had said, and I brought the letter with, but had said that it was going to be available, but had to be with permission with fourth and fifth grade. And ultimately, I had thought about it for a while to say whether or not I was going to appeal it, and I decided not to. But to me, that shows graver concern of the fear of, and it's been discussed before, of retaliation, the fear of targeting. And as a decision maker, it's really important that regardless of the opinions of somebody, that we're going to have a fair process, right? When we have an issue come up with our staff or a concern about a student, we are going to go through a fair process. We're going to hold accountability to the policies that we follow and go through that. And so for me, that was the most concerning thing in this whole process. And it did not matter what the end result was after that in my head, in my own personal head. It was just disheartening.
I want to say how seriously I take your concern about targeting, harassment, doxing. I have seen it happen, not just to Republican school board members, Democratic school board members, some who have left office because it got so intense. Mm-hmm. People being sent photos of their own front door. Some really scary stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think people should write that off, even people who don't agree with you. I think you have to take that seriously. So let me say that for the record. I also wanted to ask, you know, did you feel at any point like this was going to be, maybe conflict of interest is too strong a word, but complicated, because you are a person who wears two hats? And there are lots of people in public office who have to sort this out. At any point as you were, as a mom, making this challenge, you thought, this might run into some uncharted waters because I am also on the board?
I think it's why it took me 6 weeks before I decided, of saying, but one of the things that I said, and I know I released a statement after the result of the superintendent was given, was that don't feel bad about standing up for your kids. And for those 6 weeks, I felt bad about it. I said, maybe I shouldn't do this. And then I thought to myself, why? Why would I ever put myself in a position that I would be unwilling to bring up a concern about my kids? And that's ultimately why I decided to do it. I said, this is not something that sits right with me. It's not it's unsettling for me. So to stand up for your kids, to bring up a concern, no matter how uncomfortable, you know, I've talked with parents that they've gone through things like bullying and harassment, of stand up for your kids. It's your job to go and talk to adults, and that's literally what happened. And so I do understand the complexity of it, but it weighed heavy on my heart too before I even did it. But I know that I did not utilize my power as the board member to try to sway any of this process, because that would be unethical, and that's not who I am.
And we did talk to Superintendent Barnes about this, and he did say that he was, you know, never once pressured by you or the board in any way. I mean, just to shoot straight here, you're Republican. There's a Republican majority on the board. It wouldn't be the first time I'd seen a board pressure a manager behind closed doors. I've heard absolutely nothing to indicate that happened here.
Well, because that's the truth. And so I'm grateful to hear that. So the biggest thing and the takeaway is that I expect accountability with our staff, but I'm also going to respect the fact that parents are going to bring things up. And in this instance,
the concern that the parent brought up was not given the same verdict as they would have liked, you know, and I being the parent, I did feel it was enough to say it needs to be removed. Board hat, one board member can't do anything. It takes four of us to do anything together. So this was something that getting the result back, I thought it was fair. Did I agree with it? No. But being a rational person, I say, I want there to be fairness.
But as the mom, you don't have to agree with it.
Yeah.
You can feel how you want to feel.
Yeah. That's true, too.
So this is the last thing I want to talk about, because you had, and I think we probably disagree on whether or not WHQR should have done this story. But I appreciate you being here to talk about it, because I think there are some more important issues that this brought up. One being you, and I take you at your word, I believe Superintendent Barnes, that there was nothing untoward happening, that the process went the way it should have gone. But you being a board member and a mom, you know, could implicitly put some pressure on a manager. I've seen situations on city council or on county commission where an elected official has a complaint as a private citizen. And that is, even at times when it's been handled fairly, very stressful for the administration. And you also noted that you felt like this potentially put your family at additional risk. I would counter that you've done a lot of things on the dais that would put you at risk. And I mean that as a compliment. I mean that it is not easy to put yourself out there as an elected official these days. And again, people from both parties have had some scary run-ins, even in our local sleepy town school board. So what does that mean for people in this world who are parents and also want to serve on public boards, especially for school boards? Because this is, you know, probably the most intense intersection of these two things, because the thing you are in charge of is also the thing that your kid is experiencing, you know, 5 days a week. Is that just always going to be complicated? Is there a way out of this? Is there a way for other Josie Barnhart's or John Barnhart's or whoever to serve in both capacities, to be a parent and a school board member, and keep those streams from crossing?
I mean, I think the reason why I said yes to this conversation months ago and it's finally come to fruition is the question was asked, where do we go from here? Right? And I think that's very applicable into just today's society. Where do we go from here? And we have to be willing to engage in conversation. I didn't come into this saying, oh, guess what? I'm going to make sure that Ben agrees with everything I say. And it's going to, you know, that's not the point of having a conversation. It's sometimes understanding that there is a lot of gray area, right? When you're dealing with issues and you're saying, this is my opinion, what is the best issue? Does it mean it's perfect? No. I mean, sometimes there are in conversations of things, being open to have a dialogue and a conversation, it changes the message. Doesn't change the opinions of the people discussing it, but being able to see the complexity sometimes in a situation goes a long way for readers or listeners to understand the thought process, because there is a lot of thought that goes behind the scenes of when you're making decisions. You're not going to come to 100% agreeance on everything, because there's lots of different factors that you make the decision. And so I have always said that being willing to support people, I have three kids, willing to volunteer, engage, whatever they need. I believe that education is a partnership. So the teachers have a role in the classroom. I have a role as a parent. I have made myself available, and I will continue to make myself available as a parent. As a board member, I'm intentional about going in and just being a part of all of the great schools in our district that we have the opportunity to help facilitate for. And I also understand that not everybody's going to agree with decisions, but I think the more that we are able to have these open dialogues, is the disagreement doesn't stop the decisions making from happening. And so to get past that, to say, you're more than just one vote, you're more than just this decision, it's you're a leader in this district. So whether or not you agree or disagree, being a leader is being present and being involved. But to what you said, as far as people getting involved, it is messy. And my job has always been to make the best decisions I have that I think for what, you know, whatever comes across the desk, but at the same time, trying to explain why and where my coming from is for that decision, in hopes that we can continue to gain respect of people. Not agreeance, respect of people.
I can co-sign that.
Okay.
Here's my last thought, and this is just based on something that you mentioned, and maybe this will be a conversation for another time, but talking about, you know, Blended had a particular scene that you felt was inappropriate for a certain maturity level. I'm sure not everyone agrees with you, but I'm sure there are lots of other books where other people would feel like, whoa, that is intense stuff for whatever group of kids it's laid out for. I'm thinking back to books I read when I was in elementary school. The one that always gets me is My Brother Sam Is Dead, which has a brutal death scene at the end, which I won't recount here, but I can still remember reading it. Or Bridge to Terabithia, or All Quiet on the Western Front, all of which had fairly tragic and striking death scenes. And, I mean, this was the 80s. There was no school counselor to talk to. The school counselor was also the janitor and the nurse. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I remember it. But, you know, is there a world where, you know, if when we have these complicated situations and the choices, do we start taking whole rows out of the bookshelf because you can find lots of complicated issues in lots of books? Or do we come up with a better way to, you know, introduce those books to kids? I mean, I'm just riffing on what you said earlier today, so I don't expect you to have a perfect answer. I'm just curious what you think about that.
No, I mean, I think for me, I think coming with the conversation and the truthfulness to parents of saying, hey, we're reading this book, and just to make you aware, in these couple of chapters, these things happen. And so just an honest dialogue, because some parents are going to say, whoa, 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 that's going to be a lot for me. You know, my family went through this death recently, and my kid's currently in therapy. It's too much for them to process in addition at school. And so I think the more dialogue, again, that we can have with our parents, and not – it will help to not create this versus environment, because that's not what we want. In an education system, we need to be partners. I mean, we see our schools thriving for more of our schools are thriving that have actively involved parents. So we need to keep that involvement active so that we maintain that quality dialogue and quality education experience for all of our kids. So.
All right. Well, those are my questions for today. And I appreciate you being here. Anything else that you would want to say?
I think the biggest thing, and like I said, the reason why I was willing to come on is talking about accountability, of saying the expectation should be the same, and fairness whenever there's an issue that rises. I know there are times that things come up with staff and I say, I can't talk to you about it, right, as a board member. But I say this with the most intentionality. We treat things with fidelity. We treat things with accountability. We treat things with fairness. And so that's what I can say for parents who are continuing on. If there is a concern, I don't care if it's about a book or something else, we're going to treat it with fidelity, because we want these concerns to be addressed, whatever they look like, because we want your kids to have a good education experience. So, but I appreciate it.
All right. Well, Josie Barnhart, Vice Chair of the New Hanover County Board of Education and mother of three, thanks for being here.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my guest, Josie Barnhart. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.